If you're listening to this episode, you should know it's a part two of the discussion we had earlier about how gay Mormons can feel more welcome at church.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the own and only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Welcome back to the Leading LDS Podcast. I appreciate everybody that listens in, and if you've listened to the last few episodes, you've probably noticed I'm a bit under the weather, and that continues in the next few episodes that I'm going to be putting out here. But I feel like I'm finally getting over my cough, and I apologize for hacking in the background. You'll hear a few hacks in this episode as well. But I'm really excited to share this episode with you. I re-released the episode I did, I believe it was last year. To be honest, I can't remember when this was, but I think it was last year, right before the last North Star International Conference, whenever that was. But I sat down with a bunch of leaders who experienced same-sex attraction. And I wanted to continue that discussion now a year later or so, now that the North Star is going to be putting on another conference. And I want to promote it as much as I can. I've been more and more involved in what they're doing and what they're trying to accomplish. And the people behind this are just so top notch. And they're making a considerable difference in helping those individuals who are faced with a life of same-sex attraction. And not to treat it like it's a disease or an issue, but that's their reality. And I'm so grateful that there are organizations like North Star that are there to support and lead people through this journey. So it's just not a decision that leads out of the church for individuals. So in this episode, I sit down with three individuals, which I'll introduce, Bridget Pack, Greg Harris, and Joseph Stith. Now, please understand that we sat down for well over an hour and a half recording this, and you'll hear everything that we recorded. But I'm breaking it up in two interviews. And the reason I'm doing this is because the second part of this discussion was with Bridget Pack, and she is the spouse of an individual who is transgendered. And really powerful discussion. I learned all sorts of things that I had no idea, just because I don't live in that world day to day, right? I don't even have a loved one or a friend close to me that is transgendered. So really interesting discussion, and I hope that if there's leaders out there that have a member that's come to them with this thing, whatever, I don't know how to define it, with a gender identity questions and concerns, that maybe this interview will give you a place to start, and that you'll know that at North Star there is some resources there that can help you and some people that can help you. So again, really important interviews. I'm releasing, though we recorded all together, I am releasing those two episodes, but I'm going to release them the same day, and so that you can listen to them back to back. I just wanted to make them available separately, so if somebody wants to jump right to the transgender discussion, they can do so. We'll talk about the North Star Conference coming up in this episode, and I encourage you to be a part of that. If travel permits, I'm going to be there. I would love to shake your hand and meet many of you at the leadership session, but obviously the whole conference is going to be fantastic. And so please consider it, and I hope to meet you there, but let's jump into the interview. Welcome back to the Leading LDS Podcast. Today's going to be a fantastic episode. I have Bridget Pack, Greg Harris, and Joseph Stith, who was a former guest on the podcast, and we are going to talk all things North Star, all things same-sex attraction, all things transgender. This is a live interview. We're all in the same room and going to jump into these topics the best we can. Maybe let's just go around the room real quick. Joseph, remind us
who you are and keep in mind that the listeners have, I'm going to post our last episode right before I post this one. So hopefully they listen to that and have a good transition into this one. So, but nonetheless, give us a quick explanation of who you are, where you're from, and why you're here.
Wow, that's a big introduction. I have experienced same gender attraction since my earliest memories. I served a mission, went into the Marine Corps, not necessarily in that order, and then was married in the temple. I've been married 32 years. I have children, grandchildren, and it was just 2 years ago that I told my wife that I've always had same gender attraction, and I was released as bishop just 3 years ago, and so there's a lot of history there, but overall this challenge in my life drove me to my knees and drove me to the temple to try and find answers that eventually came, it's been a journey, and that journey continues.
Great. Great. Let's jump over to Bridget here. Bridget, you definitely have quite a different experience than that. And that's what we're here to learn about a little bit, but how did you, or what, just give us your background, who you are and good introduction on Bridget.
Sure. So my name is Bridget Pack, and I have been married for 16 years, was married in the Bountiful Temple to my spouse. And I knew prior to marriage that my spouse had some gender dysphoria, some gender issues that were confusing at the time. But only over the last couple of years has my spouse come forward and admitted that it is that he fully identifies as transgender, meaning he was born biologically a male in every way. But his inside, his mind, his spirit, everything else, at least in his way, feels that it should have been, it is female, always has been. We have one daughter. And she's the light of our lives. We live in Syracuse. And I got involved with North Star because I was desperately seeking resources for those that experience transgender identities in the church. And there hadn't really been this discussion held previously. So I felt really passionately that this was the place that was ready to start that dialogue.
Awesome. Great. Greg, let's hear it. What's your introduction?
Well, first, I just want to thank you, Kurt, for letting us be here tonight. And I also want to thank Bridget and Joseph for being here, because I believe they both have a really unique perspective that we can all learn from. My name is Greg Harris. Why am I here? That's a great question. I am the president-elect of North Star International, and I am a gay Mormon, experienced same-sex attraction, the oldest of six children. I have a brother who is also gay and lives with his partner right now. So it's an experience that we've gone through as a family. Served my mission in Guatemala. I have never married. Been able to serve in the church in a number of different callings. I've served as Elders Quorum President a couple of times and the ward mission leader. Had a chance to teach the missionary prep class. I love teaching. That's one of my favorite callings for sure. But I'm here tonight to be able to discuss a little bit about North Star, which is an organization for LGBT members of the church who are striving to live the restored gospel of Jesus Christ and keep their covenants and do so in a way that feels authentic and that is joyous. And so that's really our mission. And I hope to be able to share a little bit of my story and talk about how North Star could be a potential resource for church leaders who have members of their ward or branch that are dealing with these complicated issues.
Great. Thank you. And since I can't remember the date that we had that original interview, but since then I've had the opportunity to familiarize myself more with North Star and what you're trying to accomplish, your goals. And I've just been just incredibly impressed by what's happening there, because I know there's individuals out there who feel alone and lost, and they just seek some type of community of others that they can relate to and talk with. And so the events and the conference you have coming up is such a blessing. And I definitely want to touch on that. If people have visited Leading LDS, they will see the banner on the right that promotes that conference. And there's definitely a place. You don't have to experience same-sex attraction to attend. It could be family members or loved ones that are related individuals that are experiencing same-sex attraction or experience transgender. I'm going to trip over all the terminology here, but so be it. We'll get into that. But Greg, I kind of want to just take a step back and talk about your story a little bit. You, before we started recording, you mentioned that, everybody sort of has a story of coming to terms with your same-sex attraction, right? And some people have that very early on in life, can remember experiences as a child. And yours was maybe in your 20s where you were actually reconciling this part of you. So maybe tell us about that.
Sure. So like I said, I'm the oldest of six kids, and I grew up most of my life in Orem, Utah. So it was a really happy childhood, honestly. And I have great parents and amazing siblings with whom I have really close relationships. My paradigm growing up around this topic was, I'm kind of a logical guy. Joseph and Bridget will probably attest to that. But the way I approached the world, from a young age, I had a testimony of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. And so I, you know, associated very strongly with the church. And in my mind, my paradigm was, there are members of the church and there are gay people, and never the two should meet, right? And so for a long time, I didn't really think that this was possible, that you could be both a member of the church and experience same-sex attraction. So growing up, I really didn't think about or acknowledge this part of my life. Now looking back, you know, with this perspective, I can recognize, you know, many of the kind of common stories that people have around these issues. But for me, I really came to terms with this when I was 25 years old. I had got returned from my mission. I had graduated from BYU and was in the workforce and had been trying to date, and things weren't working out very well. And I also kind of tied in with my story simultaneously as my brother's story. And he has given me permission to share a little bit of his story as well. So I'll include that here. After he came back from his mission, he came out to our family, first to my mom, then to my dad, and then more broadly to us kids. And his journey kind of was the spark of my journey, as watching him come to terms with, you know, his sexuality, or his sexual orientation, and make decisions. And it caused me to do a lot of reflection and thinking. It did still take me a while to really come to terms with things. And I remember the first time that I kind of, what's the best way of putting it, considered the fact that this might be a part of my life. I was on the phone with one of my good friends at the time, and we were talking about life and dating and relationships. And I said to him, I remember, you know, I think I might be gay. And from that point in the conversation, I don't remember another word. All I remember going through my head, like kind of on a loop, was this phrase, like, you're a freak, over and over and over, which is a sentiment that a lot of people may have experienced going through this. And so immediately after that, I said to myself, oh, that can't be true, because they're Mormon people and they're gay people and those two things don't cross. And so I, you know, dutifully went about trying to date again, and that again didn't work out. But I, you know, a few years after that, Ty Mansfield's story came out in the magazine. Oh, what's it called?
LDS Living.
LDS Living. Thank you. You can edit that. So it came out in the LDS Living magazine. And from that magazine, I started to do a little bit of research and came across the Voices of Hope book and North Star's webpage. And that's how I got involved with the community. That's how I began my process of coming to terms with my sexual orientation and my faith as a member of the church. And that really was that process really did take place within the support community, NorthStar, which is why I feel so passionately about the organization, because it has been a great blessing in my life and helped me understand how to navigate these really complicated issues. My story growing up and how I came to terms with my sexual orientation.
Interesting. And this then, Joseph, this is strikes me a little bit different than Joseph's story, because Joseph, you always knew that this was something that was in your life, but you just swore not to tell a soul, right?
I was convinced that if I kept doing everything that my patriarchal blessing said that I should do and kept doing everything right, that one day I would be rid of this.
Yeah.
And that never happened.
Right. So, and Greg, your story is so interesting to me, because as a straight person, you know, growing up in my teens, there was no doubt in my mind the hormones that were driving me, who I was attracted to, and I had to keep that in check, right? And so would you kind of describe your experience that you felt that draw to other men, but it wasn't obvious, it wasn't like hard to control? Or,
well, I don't think that I controlled it in very healthy ways.
Okay.
But I would say, growing up, girls were always, I had a lot of really great friends. And, you know, sometimes there's this narrative in the church that, like, you know, girls, and this is actually very true, are, you know, special, and we need to treat them with respect and with dignity. And so for me, there was kind of like this, I don't want to cross into boundaries that I shouldn't be. And so I'll just be really good friends. Looking back on that now, like, I realized that it wasn't so hard for me because I wasn't like sexually attracted to them, but that was kind of the narrative that I told myself, that so that really wasn't like a concern for me at that time in my life. I had a lot of good friends that were girls. We went on dates, we went, did a lot of fun things together, but I just thought, you know, I have a lot of life goals that I'm trying to achieve. I'm going to go away to college, out of state. I'm going to serve a mission. Right now, relationships just aren't very practical. Like I said, I'm a logical person.
Yeah, sure. Okay, cool. Now, your brother coming out, this, like you said, that he came out before you did, right?
Uh-huh.
And yep. You're the oldest, so is he the next youngest?
No, he's actually, there's me, then my sister, then a set of twins, and he's one of the twins.
Oh, okay, gotcha. And so, and it was at this time you were about 25 when he came out as well?
I'm a little fuzzy on the time frames. I think he came out like a little bit before that, but it was kind of in the same time range. Yeah.
So looking back on that, I'm just curious, because you're basically two siblings who've taken two different courses, right? And journeys. Mm-hmm. And
yep.
How does that work in your family? You know, basically what I'm looking for is, how is love portrayed there? How is acceptance portrayed there, without saying like, well, you know, Greg's our more favorite gay son because he's figured out how to stay in the church or those things. And obviously that would, I'm sure that's not the case, but I'm just. Yeah.
No, that's a really great question. Well, first, I guess I would say, Kurt, that it's complicated. And one of the things that I've learned going through this experience and talking to many, many men and women is that this journey, it is a personal one for me, but it's also a family journey, and we go on it together as a family. I'm sure Bridget will talk a little bit about that with her experience with her husband. And so it's been a learning experience as a family, you know. We have, I guess the way that I have approached my relationship with my brother, he came out and when he was living with me, actually, he and I were roommates, and at first it was kind of a shock. I'd never really thought about that before. And it, like I said, it challenged my paradigm of the world and the way that things were. But I also knew what a wonderful person my brother was. And he is one of the most kind, caring, sensitive people I've ever met in my entire life. And so it was like, well, I love my brother so much. This is a part of his life. And it took me time to kind of come to terms with that. Where the great switch and transition has happened for me personally in my relationship with my brother is, you know, I realized that each of us, we understand our situations and the difficulties that lie with, you know, this life path. And so I respect and honor his ability to use his God-given gift of agency in the way that he feels is best. And he is respectful to me in that very same way. And what I've really learned is, instead of passing judgment on people, I leave judgment to the Savior, and he's truly the expert because he understands each and every one of us intimately and personally. And I just focus on loving my brother, which is so easy to do because he's such an amazing person. And I've grown up with him all my life, and our relationship, especially over the last few years, has gotten closer than ever before. And I feel like because we have that mutual understanding and respect, that we are able to have conversations that maybe other members of the family can't. Now, how has our family kind of gone through that journey? I think every single person has gone through it in a different way in their own time frame, and everyone is still on that journey to some degree. You know, there's always questions about boundaries, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, and those are all really good questions. Those are hard questions. Those are questions that, you know, the brethren have counseled us to be prayerful about. And rather than say exactly what our family has done or hasn't done, because I think we've all been learning in this process together, I would say what I've noticed is that as we as a family have sought to understand one another, me understand their perspective, some of my siblings have children and their concerns, and them trying to seek understanding of our situation, that over time we have both been able to come to a place of better understanding and love as a family. And I hope that that can continue to grow and progress over time, and that we can always seek to understand first. I think that's the greatest principle that this journey has taught me from a family relationship perspective.
Great. And when you were coming to terms with it after he had come out, you know, terms with your own same-sex attraction, did you sort of feel like, oh no, my journey will be hit, like I have to go down the same road he did, which is out of the church? And
Jason knows I'm a pretty independent guy.
Okay.
I guess I didn't really know what I was going to do, honestly, Kurt, when I started down this road. And I have made different life choices and explored different possibilities, you know, dated guys and explored that realm to see what that would be like. And there was a lot of positive things that I learned in my life from doing that. But ultimately, I made a decision for me that that wasn't the direction that I wanted to take my life. And why did I make that decision, I think, is an important question to ask. And I think it's an important question that everyone needs to ask. Like, what decisions are we going to make? For me, when I looked at this, I said, look, this is my life. Like, this is my future and what my life will look like. So it's really important to me to make a good decision. And honestly, I wasn't going to make that decision based on what my siblings thought, what my family thought, what the prophet thought, what, you know, my friends or the social media world thought. To me, this was a decision between me and God. And I told you earlier in the podcast that I've always had a close relationship with him, and I had some really spiritual experiences as a boy and growing up that have always confirmed that relationship to me. And so as I made this decision, it was very much based on what I felt like God wanted for me in my life. And because I trust him from 30 years of experience, I made the decision that I did.
Right. And how did this, how did you come across North Star?
Well, I came across North Star from the magazine article with Ty and Danielle that they did, and started exploring, like, who is this Ty Mansfield guy? And he happened to be one of the founders of the organization. And I came across the website from reading that article and doing a little bit of research into him. Yeah. And then from that point, I started getting involved with the community. There's a social media group that we have where we support one another, and a post went out to kind of say, hey, we need someone to help Ty. He has kind of some secretarial duties that he needs some support with. And I thought to myself, well, I don't know too much about this, but Ty knows a lot about this topic. And if I work with him, maybe I'll learn something about this too. So I selfishly volunteered, and it's come back to haunt me.
A mentorship opportunity there. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. And now you're following him up as president, which is,
yeah,
will happen at this.
Guilty as charged.
Nice. Cool. Well, I'm sure, I know everybody speaks very highly of you, as I've had opportunity to visit different events. And so I think North Star is on the right track for sure. Well, let me see. What am I missing here? Maybe Joseph, we'll go over to you a little bit. And let's talk. Obviously, this is a leadership podcast, and it's great to hear Greg's story and understand that. I find it interesting the different, each story is so different, you know, and it's easy for people outside of this world to say, oh, you all went through the same, you know, it was through your, those teenage years when you came to terms with this, and then you finally told somebody and whatever, but each story is so different. And tell us about this conference coming up, and there's a leadership component to it. So Joseph and Bridget, if you want to jump in, I know you're very much involved in the planning of this. And so,
Bridget, let's have a discussion. A co-conference, co-creator, co-chair. Thank you. Co-chair of the conference. So grateful for that. And one of my responsibilities is over the priesthood leader track and in training priesthood leaders. Last year, church leaders, sorry. We're changing that to church leaders purposely because we don't want it to be specific to priesthood leaders, because this is something that young women leaders, Relief Society presidents, and all the above really need to have a better understanding of as well, and are asking for that support. So church leaders is much more inclusive. Last year I had the opportunity to be part of that breakout session for priesthood leaders. That was a great experience. In fact, I would love to just read a comment that was made by one of the stake presidents that was there.
Cool.
He actually asked me to read this on his behalf. He said, I consider the North Star Conference a must for all church leaders. I went to the 2015 conference and was deeply personally rewarded and significantly enabled with regard to how to support and minister to members of my stake who live with SSA or SGA. At the conference, I met exceptional people from whom I had and have much to learn, and from whom I quickly gained great respect and admiration. Too many of us understand too little and are poorly equipped to know how to help our LGBT members. If you have members in your ward or stake who feel confused or feel fearful or hurt from not knowing how to move forward with these issues, and you do, spend a day or two at the 2016 North Star Conference learning how to minister to them. Close quote. I was so grateful that we were able to make a difference and offer some real answers to priesthood leaders. But interestingly, I did not have one person come to me while I was bishop the entire time I served as bishop with anything related to gender identity or same gender attraction. But because I experienced it in silence and secrecy, I lost sleep at night wondering how I would answer that question. Because even someone that experiences it doesn't know necessarily how to respond to that. And having all of that pent up question that I've lived with, now we have answers. Now at this conference, we'll be able to help church leaders understand better how to create a safe place and open a dialogue that will allow people to more... to a better environment to come forward.
If I could interject, one of the things I love that you said is that we need to help minister to everyone in our communities. And that could be those experiencing these feelings, but it could also be family members, a friend, or possibly even the ward that knows there's somebody in their boundaries that has these, or maybe even has left the church because of some of these issues. And so at the conference, it is not a platform for us to go over the doctrine of it. I mean, the church has done what it can to outline that. The conference really is an opportunity to understand, as members of the church, how we can better support and love those in our around us. It also for church leaders to understand where to even begin asking the right questions to find a path of, you know, love and understanding within their own communities.
Exactly. What to say, what not to say, how to respond when someone comes forward, mm-hmm. How to, when you think about, I think too often we think that this is a very small portion of our ward membership that may be experiencing this. But for those who are open about it, not to mention those that haven't even come forward yet, those that are open represent a huge majority of the ward members who know someone, either father, parent, grandparent, sibling, friend, church leader, that are dealing with this and don't know how to respond. They of course want to show love, but that's complicated on a number of levels.
Yeah. And I like what you said about kind of laying awake at night as a bishop, wondering what you would say if somebody would come to you. And that, I would imagine, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine that's sort of the step one for a lot of people in coming out, is I'm going to go talk with my bishop. And there's a lot that can sway that person in their journey going forward, how that interaction goes, right? And so if a bishop knows what to say to start that discussion, to begin that journey, and does so with love and has resources, that could totally change this person's life in eternity, right?
So true, because history is already fraught with multiple disasters of that not going right.
Right.
And we can't afford to lose one soul.
For sure. Now, Bridget, give us the basic outline of the event. Like it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday type thing. Is that right?
Yes. So we have a kickoff social that starts on Thursday. It's actually going to be held in Salt Lake, and it's welcome to anyone within North Star or that wants to come and understand North Star. It's at the Sons of Utah Pioneers Center. I can get the exact address. It will be on the website as well. They can locate it there. We would ask that they at least register so that we know that they're going to be coming to Thursday. We have an idea for count, more for planning purposes. But even if you've missed that, we still encourage you to come. And we are going to do a service project there where we are making courage capes for some of the local hospitals, for some of the children that have, need medical care, and then food kits for the homeless youth shelter. So we're going to be putting those together that evening. It's a great service chance. Then on Friday and Saturday, there are full days of conference workshops and breakouts that cover a vast amount of shared issues that we all face in our community. A lot about internal struggles that you may be faced with, or depression, suicide, addiction. These are things that it does not matter, where your backgrounds are from or what you identify as or what your orientation is. We all share some of these struggles. Then there's going to be some workshops that are very demographic specific, and such things that some of the women that experience same gender attraction, they may not have the same experiences as a man who experiences same gender attraction. And we want them to feel that their answers are still able to be found at the conference. And then, of course, we have some demographic specific ones for those that have transgender journeys in life and how to get them help. Those that are friends and family, those that are church leaders. It's just so many topics that we have to identify the biggest needs and the biggest part of it, which is getting us all together, just to realize that we can discuss these things together.
And on Saturday morning, we now have a special session that is actually free for church leaders. They're able to register and attend the first keynote session, which will be
Virginia Pierce.
And then following that will be the first breakout taught by two bishops on this type of training.
And you're one of those bishops, isn't it?
I'm one of those this year.
Yeah. So it's actually two bishops and a stake presidency member. So in total, the three of you will cover same gender attraction issues facing that church leaders face, as well as gender identity issues that could be discussed. So it's really going to be a great dialogue.
Correct.
Cool. And that the other bishop involved has also been on Leading LDS. I won't reveal his name. You'll have to come to the conference and can meet somebody else who's been interviewed on the How I Lead segment. And so the Thursday, Friday, that's the paid portion and part most of Saturday. But that Saturday morning leadership session is free for all.
That's correct.
And so you strongly encourage leaders, no matter Relief Society, really anybody that's in a leadership role, and I mean really anybody.
They'll learn all of the resources, specifically all the resources available to them, so that they can really incorporate that into their ministry.
Awesome.
And while Friday and Saturday, the rest of the conference is paid for other attendees, we do have great ways to make sure that everybody who wants to attend can attend. The website has a sponsorship option where people were. They may be facing financial difficulties or a student and they want to apply for some financial assistance. You can go there and apply, and we still have some funds left. So if if you want to come, please don't think that a finances should ever stop anyone from attending. And if you want to volunteer, maybe you're not ready to come out and ask those questions, but you know you have friends and family who are experiencing these. Maybe just coming to volunteer at the bookstore, volunteering during the conference, could allow you to interact with some of these amazing church members who can help you understand.
Awesome. I'm glad you mentioned that, for sure. And we'll talk about the conference as we go throughout the rest of the interview. But anything else we aren't highlighting that should be in relation to the conference, Greg?
I just want to say one thing about specifically church leaders. We recognize that church leaders are entitled to divine guidance and assistance from Heavenly Father in addressing these very complicated issues. And we would never propose that we have all the solutions or answers of exactly what you should or shouldn't do. But what you really can come and experience is personal narratives and stories and best practices that have been used in places that have made a difference. And we hope that under the guidance of our Heavenly Father and the Spirit, that you will be able to write down a few notes that will help you in your ministry with the members of your ward or branch. And one thing I will guarantee to you is that the Spirit will be there. I've been heavily involved in the planning for the last 2 years. I've attended both times, and it is truly a spiritually uplifting experience for all who attend.
What would you say to somebody that is curious, is the church endorsing this? You know, should I be leery? You know, am I going to get in trouble with my stake president or area authority if I show up at this thing? How would you respond to that?
So North Star is independent from the church and not sponsored by the church. It's, you know, our mission obviously is to support men and women striving to live their lives in harmony with the restored gospel of Jesus Christ, specifically in keeping their covenants that they've made as members of the church. What I would say is, you know, as you come to the conference, you will feel a great sense of love. And again, I think one of the things that maybe church leaders are hesitant about is that they think that coming here, that maybe we're trying to tell them exactly how they should minister, and that's simply not the case. Our goal is to help them have a forum to be able to ask questions, to have a forum to be able to hear experiences, and then go back, like I said, to their wards and minister in the way that Heavenly Father directs them. But I can guarantee them when they come, they'll be embraced with love. And I can't, like, personally, you coming to this conference is a great way to show the members of your ward who or branch who are going through this how much you care about them and are seeking to understand.
Great. Bridget?
I know every time I've met with my bishop or stake presidents, they always end with the fact that they pray constantly for my family. And I believe that in every way. But as a young child, I was always taught when you are praying for something, you also need to educate yourself about that something. And don't come to a decision without that education process first. And so I would just say, you know, while we know these bishops and any church leader is praying diligently for their individual members, this is a great chance to just come and discuss some of these issues that the members might be facing so that they can go and they can pray for their own revelation on how to handle their specific needs of the ward.
Great. You know, just this week I went out to lunch with a good friend whose father is gay and married to another man. And you know, and he's very my friend is very active in the church, and we were talking about this a little bit, and he lives with this inner conflict of he's just so concerned about the balance he has between loving the individual but also standing for what he believes in, you know. And I think this conference is such a good opportunity if people or somebody, family members, can come and you can start to learn to say, this is how I can begin to show love and be okay with showing that love. Because I feel like we talked a little about the culture of the church before we recorded. And there sometimes is this culture of feeling like, oh, I've got to take a stand, you know, and I've got to let everybody on Facebook know where I stand. Because we hear these incredible pioneer stories of mobs coming up to them and standing for what's right, right? And so we sort of feel like this is maybe our call to stand, you know, and say what's right and wrong, but it's more of an opportunity to figure out how to love, right? And if we can figure out how to love all these individuals that are conflicted, then they'll stay longer. If they stay longer, they'll have opportunity to participate in more ordinances and the sanctification process happens. You know, so this is, I'm so grateful for this conference, and I will be there. And so if anybody's listening and sees me there, I'd love to shake your hand and congratulate you for being there with me, and we'll all learn together. So great conference. Joseph, this is maybe just a total shift in the conversation, but you wanted to share some information about being a leader with some youth that struggled with same-sex attraction. Do you want to go there? Is that...
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. It's painful to think about because over the last 25 years, I was either a youth leader or in the bishopric. And there are 6 individuals now who I watched and knew very, very closely as they grew up. Those 6 individuals, both men and women, have now moved on with their life. And not one of them is active, but all of them have come out to be either bisexual or gay or a number of issues, except for gender identity. And yet, because, how do I say this? Because I just knew. It's like I knew that they were potentially dealing with this. And I think I wasn't the only one. I'm pretty sure I wasn't the only one.
And this was prior to you being bishop.
This is prior to me being a youth bishop leader. Okay. And during the time that I was bishop, to some extent. But we didn't know what to say. We just didn't know how to go there. And it was never talked about. It wasn't talked about openly. It's something that we read about, but it was never an open conversation anywhere, because that's just not been our culture. Within a ward or a stake, it's not been our culture to talk about this and be open about, if you're experiencing this, let's talk about it. I'm haunted by wondering if we could have created a safer environment. Would those very individuals that are coming forward now and talking about how, when we thought they were gaining testimonies in the gospel through young men's and young women's and so forth, and yet they now tell a very different story, that they felt lonely and isolated, like they were never going to fit in, and they had no one to talk to. And when they finally came out, their only way of reconciling their faith with their feelings was to ultimately leave the church. And I will forever be haunted by that, wondering if there was something more that I could do. And having those feelings myself made it that much more complicated, because it's like I could be part of the solution here, but how do I do that? How do I do that?
I know that I obviously can speak more passionately and more involved into the gender identity community, but I think one of the things that's coming out now is we're realizing that somebody experiencing some gender attraction, it doesn't matter how hard you prayed throughout your life or how, you know, if you went on a mission or not, your financial circumstance, your educational circumstance, it is hitting every family around us. Every single person could experience these things. And we just need to find a way to understand each other and have the dialogue needed to make sure everyone is finding the support they need. I know in the gender community, just even we have a secret Facebook group through North Star, and on our small group, just those here in Utah, we've had people who have gone all the way through education. We have one that's an ER surgeon. We have those that have been bishops and stake presidents, those that are very, very young and facing this. And one of the biggest differences in everybody's journey is the point when they finally realized this is who they were, and they stopped feeling the guilt and shame for having these thoughts or feelings. And so much of that influence came from the church community, because at school now they're somewhat being talked about or discussed or accepted. Family's going to love you, so they're finding that at home. Church, that one place that you would think to refuge to, was still the place that so many of these youth or anyone throughout their lives are finding rejection, or maybe even it's not full rejection, but lack of understanding. And as I talk about the transgender issue, you know, we have so many youth that maybe born female, but now fully understand that they're a male spirit or a male, and they want to be seen as a male. How do we handle that in young women, young men's programs? How do we even understand how to talk to the parents about these issues? And I'm not telling you I have the answers either, but it just comes from discussing this and reaching out to those children and making sure that they know we want them to return to our Heavenly Father.
And along those lines of the youth in this subject, you know, I anticipate my little boy's 1 year old. I'm many years out from having these discussions, but you know, for sure I'm going to have this discussion about pornography, right? And say, let's talk about it and bring it up and discuss how we can avoid it and what happens if you do come across it. And I sometimes wonder, like, what if, you know, I want to be the father who, I don't know if the right method is saying, you know, at 15, 16, I say, hey, just curious, have you ever felt attracted to other men? Like, because if you have, let's talk about it. But if not, you know, but it can be very awkward conversations. So, but what would you say to leaders? And maybe, like you said, not that we are a room full of answers here, but if there's a bishop out there or a young men's leader or a young women's leader who just is getting the feeling that this youth is a bit different than the others and maybe is conflicted with these feelings, what do they do? Do they bring it up or do they just hope the problem goes away, which I think has been the mode of operation for years?
Well, I guess, Kurt, one thing that I would say, and again, recognizing that I don't have all the answers, whether you bring it up or not, I think is a case-by-case situation, but there are a few things that I would say that I would definitely recommend them, you know, leaders to consider. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. People in these situations desperately are looking to feel like they belong, that they have a place, you know, that they can be a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Many have had spiritual experiences and they're trying to figure out how do those experiences fit with this part of my life and can I reconcile those things? So I think one of the greatest things any leader can do, especially if they suspect or know for certainty that this is a part of someone's life, is over-index and helping them feel like they belong, that they are loved, that they are welcome. And I would say if they know that someone's going through these experiences and they've confided in them, let them know that they have a beautiful, happy, meaningful, purposeful life ahead of them. They are not doomed to some second-class status within God's kingdom or that somehow they're going to have a life of misery. And if they suffer through it, finally one day all will be well and they'll get all the blessings that they are looking for. But that God wants them to have a beautiful life right now. That might mean it looks a little different. And that might mean that they have a chance to really learn what it means to develop a relationship with God so that he can direct their life. But he will direct their life and they deserve to be happy and joyful. And that's something that they need to know because that's often not the narrative that's out in the world.
Also, in some of the breakout topics we're going to be discussing is sometimes it's not just the individual feeling that they don't have a place in the church, but we talk a lot about the family and the shame sometimes families feel when their child comes out with same gender attraction or a transgender child comes forward. So we have a whole breakout about not carrying the shame of your family, instead using this as an opportunity for your family to grow and enhance the beauty of that unity. So we recognize the impact it has through all levels of the family unit.
Shame is huge in this. It's so pervasive when you have these attractions and have these identity issues. Greg mentioned the predominant narrative today is far greater for our youth in the world than anything that I grew up with. So they really come to believe that if I'm gay, if I have these feelings, if I have these attractions, then there's no place for me in this church. They've been told that more often than any other generation has. And so in some ways, I think we're like the alternative to the alternative because no one even realizes that there are now other voices where many of these men who have been married for many, many years have been addressing this on very personal and spiritual levels. And some of them are just now starting to talk about it, but it's been such a silent, secret thing that we have not, we have done them an injustice, I think, by not talking about it, because the only ones they hear that are talking about it are those that have left the church because that was their choice. And I'm not condemning that, just for the record.
I just want to add one quick thing right there. Last week I had an opportunity to present at a church leadership training meeting up in Centerville. And there was, you know, we filled a full chapel of 32 stake leaders who came to hear this. But at the end of that meeting, one sweet sister came up to me and she shook my hand and she said, "You're like a celebrity or something, because I've never met an active gay Mormon in the church." And while I really...
You're a unicorn. Wow.
I truly like appreciate like her kindness and willingness to do that. But to me, it illustrates this problem that Joseph just mentioned, that this should be a common narrative that this is possible so that people understand their options, especially our youth.
Awesome. You mentioned that this leadership training. I know, Joseph, you've been to a stake or two doing some training. If a bishop, stake president is interested, maybe there's a somebody in, you know, a gay couple in the ward and they just want maybe to train the ward council. Is that something they can reach out to North Star and set up?
Absolutely. We have a contact us option on our website, northstarlds.org. We really do prefer to be able to have to church leaders request our assistance. And we always want to operate under the guidance of priesthood authority. So when requests come from priesthood leaders and we can go into the wards, we feel like that's our greatest opportunity to be successful. So we highly encourage anyone who would like us to come support in any way, go onto our website, contact us, and we'd be happy to respond.
Great. I think that's a very valuable resource.
In one of the stakes I was invited to following the conference, it was going to start out with the stake presidency and the stake council. And by the time I got there, they had filled the entire Relief Society room with just every leader in the stake, young women's. It was beautiful. And one of those questions that came from a man in the back that I can't believe he actually asked this in front of the stake presidency, but he says, "Well, how do you feel then as an individual who experiences this? How do you feel when the brethren condemn it like they do in conference? Do you feel like they're maybe a little out of touch with what you're experiencing?" I thought, well, I'm going to turn that to your stake president to answer, because we don't condemn them at all. That's not what we do at North Star. We are completely 100% in line with the brethren, and we don't differ. We're not waiting for them to change the revelation. We want them to be right where they are, and we feel it's our responsibility. But I love the way he answered that question. And it was such a spiritual experience for me. He stood up, the stake president stood up, and he said, "Who by chance actually has a son who is gay?" He said, "Let me answer that by quoting this article of faith. We believe all that God has revealed, all that he does now reveal, and we believe that he will yet reveal many great and important things pertaining to the kingdom of God. And we are all still learning and we are listening." And I was so grateful for that answer.
Yeah. Wow. And I'm glad you made that emphasis, because you're not coming in as a secondary resource saying, "Well, listen, you know, we all love President Monson. Isn't he cute? You know, but let's really talk about what's going on here." Like, you recognize them as prophets, seers, and revelators, and you're not going to
absolutely
counteract anything that they've said or anything. So,
absolutely.
And that's what I love about North Star. And so I hope all leaders out there listening can feel comfortable contacting you, knowing that you're going to get a faith-promoting resource on the other end.
And also, you know, a bishop in his own individual ward could have the opinion that these members experiencing these thoughts are welcomed and loved. But the bishop can only do so much. I think it does involve every auxiliary leader and every member there down from that. So when we're having these dialogues, the reason we really felt passionately this year it wasn't a priesthood leader invitation, it was a church leader invitation, is that We want every single member to find a place of acceptance at Relief Society, Young Women's, Young Men's, in Sunday school, primary, as a primary member of the primary presidency, we're facing this. Also, seminary teachers, institute leaders, they all have the opportunity to come and talk about it because they are going to be experiencing this if they haven't already.
You asked the question, how would you address this if you thought someone was dealing with it? Or granted, it's one thing to minister to an individual who's already expressed these attractions. That's a completely different thing. But for those who we suspect may be struggling for a number of reasons, I think the best way to approach that is to not do it individually, because if someone hasn't come out to themselves yet, someone addressing it one-on-one isn't going to help. In fact, it could drive it even deeper into that shame mode. But being able to talk to combined young men's, young women's, and just say, in fact, there was an experience that I just learned about in which there was a leader that had never had anyone come forward. And following the conference, he went back and he told all of the youth, I've been to a conference about same gender attraction. I went to North Star and I need to tell you what I learned. And I met the most wonderful people there. And if you are experiencing this, I need you to know that I now know something about this and I would love to talk to you and share resources that we learned. The floodgates opened. And I wish I could have done that.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you say some of these youth or individuals may not have come out to themselves. And to me as a straight leader, that's such a foreign concept to me because I never felt like I had to come out to myself. I just mm-hmm. grew up and mm-hmm. girls started looking mm-hmm. attractive to me. And I thought, yep, that's what happens, uh-huh. right? And so I never had to come to terms with that, where a lot of these people, it's sort of like your experience, Greg, where it wasn't until your 20s where you could really articulate those words, right? And so that's such an interesting concept that I think most leaders just assume like, they're gay and they've always known they're gay. Like, mm-hmm. so let's talk about it, right? But they may not have reconciled that yet.
And I think going along with what Joseph said, which I thought was a great suggestion, this is a very personal, intimate part of someone's life. And if someone is going to feel comfortable sharing it with someone else, they have to trust them. They have to know that they're going to be able to be received, or at least believe that they're going to be received with love. And so if you suspect that someone in your ward is going through this, develop that deep, close, personal relationship with that person. And then in their own time, when they are ready, they will confide in you because they feel that deep connection with you.
That concludes this first section, this first part of this interview. Look for the next episode that I'll title something with transgender in the title and listen to that. Regardless if this is an issue you face, it's important for leaders to at least start becoming familiar with this so that if someone does approach you with it, you at least know where to start and have some ideas. But I want to thank Bridget, Greg, and Joseph for being so open and kind to discuss these topics with me, and I hope this information helps you. If you have further questions or I missed something, go to leadinglds.com and find the post that references this episode and leave a comment at the bottom. And we will make sure that those comments are read by Greg or somebody on the board there at North Star and get you a really good, solid answer. But as always, I would encourage you to go to northstarlds.org, check out the resources there, and go to the conference. I want to see you there and meet you, and especially leadership. It's free. If you're in Utah in the Provo area, you know, it's just a short drive to be there. But even if it's a little bit of a long drive, I think you'll find it's well worth your time. I'm very excited about it. I'm grateful again for North Star. As always, as you have opportunity to assist in what we're trying to accomplish at Leading LDS, please go to leadinglds.com/help and look for a way there to contribute, whether it's monetarily or simply giving a few minutes of your time or sharing this message. What a fantastic episode this would be to email over to your stake president, your Relief Society president,
bishop, a young men, young women leader, and I think it would be a blessing to them to hear it. So until next time, be a leader and not a calling.